Several years ago, I found a new CPA firm for a growing cabinet maker in the St. Louis area, and I hired the firm, as it was called back then, BKD. So members of my client and the BKD partner and his tax manager, we were dining in downtown St. Louis with the Gateway Arch in full view, and the topic of rating of books came up, and I asked the tax partner about his favorite books. He started mentioning the key sections of a book: marketing, production, and accounting. And I smiled because I knew exactly the title he was talking about. It's In the Black by Alan Bostrom. And his co-author is also today's guest, Roger Kinect. A few weeks ago, someone from Roger's marketing team stated they liked the show and wanted to know if Roger could be a guest. So here we are. Is accounting boring? Yes or no? And you are going to love Roger's take on this because he is a great communicator. I'm Mark Gandy, and this is CFO Bookshelf. Roger Kinect is the president of Universal Accounting, and you are going to like listening to him. I've already said he's a very gifted and engaging communicator. The book, again, we'll be talking about is In the Black, 9 Principles to Make Your Business Profitable. And you know by now that I enjoy hearing other people's origin stories. And that's where we started this conversation with Roger.
I was working back in the 90s in the film and entertainment industry. And while I was involved in that, I happened to have a non-compete. I'm going to try and tell this story real short. A non-compete that didn't allow me to move from one company to another company. And it was because of that that I got involved in direct permanent placement opportunities with accounting professionals. Specifically, I was working for Robert Half International and their account temps, and later went and worked for another agency called Accounting Solutions, which I believe no longer exists. But my story there is the fact that I became acquainted with Universal Accounting. They had started back in 1979. So in the 90s, they were very established, and they were basically churning out accounting professionals from some accounting programs that they offered. And in the courses, they trained individuals, entry level, mid management, upper level. And so I was in a situation where I could take those individuals and place them in positions of employment. And I loved these people. These people were doing great. I put them on assignment, and whether it be permanent or direct temporary placement opportunities, I would, with my clients, get requests for individuals that had that same type of training. I just thought, this is a gold mine. So I built a relationship with the school. I was taking graduates that wanted employment, and I was finding them positions. It was working phenomenally for me. And when I then was approached by Universal Accounting to do some consulting work, they had some opportunities that they needed with the state of Utah and some other things going on. And I said, yeah, I'll happily do that. So I started taking on some consultative part-time type things. There was some growth going on in the organization that some feedback and input with that I participated in. Lo and behold, 1999, I was offered a position with the company working part-time. And I just thought, hey, this is thought I can contribute and make a difference. That quickly turned into a full-time opportunity, worked my way up through the company and organization, found myself in various roles, took on most of the positions within the company over the years. And at one point, nearly 8, 9, 10 years ago, the president of the company decided to retire, and he approached me and asked me to take the helm, and I've been president ever since.
One quick question. You were doing accounting in the film industry, you say? So as the credits are rolling, are you one of the people that would have been listed at the end of a movie or a TV show?
Good question. No, I wasn't involved in the actual production of the films. I was actually on the sales side. So I was involved in actually getting the films to market. And so I was involved in that side of the business. And so I don't believe my name appears on any credits. So that's unfortunate. But then again, nobody looks at them, right? So that's all right.
But when I do see the credits rolling, I am looking for, oh, there was a controller on this, or you'll see someone who usually AP will be listed, and sometimes payroll. There'll be a payroll clerk that's listed in those credits. Mm-hmm. I am familiar with Universal Accounting. And I think the way, I'm trying to remember what came first. Did I find him on a web search or is it the book? We're going to be talking about the book In the Black, where you're one of the co-authors. Let's just say that I found UA first through the book. Interesting story. And I mentioned this in an email to you. So I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. And with a lot of the businesses I work with, we usually end up firing the current CPA firm and we bring on a newer CPA firm, usually a little bit bigger, more resources. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate mail from this, from small CPA firms around America. But anyway, I'm in St. Louis. I just introduced a client to, I think it was with BKD. So they're getting some free press. Their name has just changed. So we're having lunch, the tax partner and one of his right-hand people, a tax manager. So we're talking about books. So I just asked the tax partner, what's your favorite book? He said, and I'm not joking, he said In the Black, and he mentioned the three circles. He mentioned the three circles of marketing, production, and accounting. And he mentioned that specifically, and I have never forgotten that. That's been over 10 years ago. So do you get that about the book?
First of all, that is awesome. And yes, I do actually have occasions where people come up and share the book. So I don't know if this is too boastful, but I can honestly say that for some individuals, the book has been transformational as business owners and as accounting professionals as to what it is they can and ought to be doing in business. And so I've been very honored to be a recipient of people who come and just give praise to this was life-changing. It had a trajectory in their business that really made a difference. So what you just experienced, I've also experienced, and I'm happy you heard that. So thank you for sharing it.
And I think what's helpful for especially young accountants where they've gone to school and the focus has been on debits and credits, the fact that they're now being exposed to, oh, by the way, there's marketing, there's production and operations in addition to accounting, I think that just, it's like, oh, yeah, there is a whole other part of business to be thinking about, and you're nodding your head. And that's probably one of the driving impetuses of this book, right?
Yeah, if I could give it at least some context, one of the things was realizing that the accounting profession is not feeling empowered or having its voice in the boardroom or in the business office with the business owner. And one of the things that we hoped to accomplish in writing the book was giving the accounting professional the ability, the confidence to actually speak up and use the accounting information that they have access to complement the narrative that the business is experiencing. Imagine the accounting professional contributing to, let's say, an advertising discussion of whether or not it's actually achieving the ROI that the business expected. Are they tracking the revenue to the advertising spend appropriately to justify that expense? They're involved in that conversation. And if they're in there contributing, collaborating, then the business owner has a greater appreciation for that role in the company. They're no longer seeing, we have an account because somebody's got to pay the accountant to do the accounting. That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with, let's find a way to proactively use the accounting information as an asset to actually increase our margins, return on investment, and so forth.
And you know the story of the small business, the $1 million that becomes $2 million. They hire an office manager, and the office manager, oh, you're going to be in charge of QuickBooks. Like all of a sudden, because you know QuickBooks, now you're an accountant. So I have to deal with my frustration, and we can't just let them go. It's like, okay, if you really want to be a bookkeeper, let's upgrade your skills. And I have recommended over the past either your organization, because you have a certification for bookkeepers, and there's another one. And we won't say who they are because we're focusing on you and Universal Accounting. But I just want to let you know that for about the last, I want to say 13, 14 years, I've recommended one of two organizations for certification. To me, that's a big deal.
First of all, thank you. I'm appreciative of that. And yeah, let's focus on the certification. what we're trying to do is in the accounting profession is give credibility to the individual that chooses to get that third party verification of that skill set. So rather than just saying, oh, I have experience and I do this, what we're trying to do as an entity, we're literally a post-secondary school, is give them the skills, training, and testing to certify they, in fact, have that skill set to go in and perform these functions in business. And as an office manager, as you were describing, there's numerous companies out there that find quality individuals, people that have great work ethic, they're loyal to the company. Why not take those individuals and invest in them to give them that additional skill set, thus improving their value to the business? But also they feel literally the investment that you did in them, they realize that there was a cost associated with this, that you asked them to take on that additional responsibility. And that's very, you know, encouraging. It's bolstering to the emotional stability that that individual has. And so, yeah, happy to be a part of that experience and process, and so empowering to individuals that didn't go the formal route to get the accounting training, but yet at the end of the day are very competent in their bookkeeping skills.
I'll never forget. And by the way, she's a listener. Her name is Penny. And I know she'll be smiling if she hears this. She was the first person I ever recommended go for the certification. And she didn't have her boss pay for it. She did it on her own. It took her about a month, and I'll never forget the email that she sent me. She was so proud of it. She showed the certificate. And for her, it was about building her confidence, and her confidence has just gone up. Now, she never went on to get the accounting degree. So I just want to say, and I hope you add to this, there was nothing wrong on the totem pole. Yeah, you may not be a certified accountant, but in my opinion, a really good seasoned certified bookkeeper, they are indispensable. They can sometimes play the role of controller.
Penny doing the great work that she did to invest in herself, get that quality training, she then gets that certification to literally now the rest of her career lean back on her experience, now having an understanding of the small business accounting model. And that's huge. She's going to go places with that. And one of the things that I think that does for her, it gives her the skills to really strive into some other roles in business where she can advance her career and become, like you said, a controller. A controller is not just involved in the bookkeeping, but literally they're involved oftentimes with working with staff, helping manage the process of accounting within the business, setting up the policies and procedures. But at the same time, that individual is making a difference simply because of their confidence in the accounting model. So well said on what you were describing there.
Let's get into the book. Now, you could say there are 9 big ideas. I'm going to focus on the big 3. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about marketing. Okay. We're going to talk about production. We're going to talk about accounting. Think of 3 circles. A Venn diagram in each circle, again, theater of the mind here. So 3 big circles, marketing, production, accounting. And really the middle is that sweet spot, according to you and the author. In the middle, I mean, you can have good marketing and good production, but terrible accounting. We know what's going to happen there. Or you can have great accounting, great production, but terrible marketing. We know what's going to happen there. So let's start with circle number 1, marketing. And we could spend 3 or 4 hours just on marketing. And I love, in fact, probably I read more marketing books than I do finance books. What's your quick, short definition in marketing? And let's keep it simple. Let's say a firm, it could be professional services, it could be e-commerce, but that $10 million and under, what's your favorite definition, Roger, of marketing?
It's any effort that is being done to identify or find the next potential client or customer. So it's basically anything that causes an individual, a company in a B2B environment to raise their hand and say, I think I could benefit from your product or service.
What do you see as the biggest limitations? And this is one where I could go on several rants because some of these small business owners will get exposed to a marketing firm, another marketing firm, and it's like they don't even know the right questions to be asking. In your, again, this is going to be opinion, but observation, what have you observed as being some of the biggest limitations of marketing for some of these smaller growing businesses?
they don't have a clear understanding of who their ideal customer is, especially when it's a smaller business. I think we're so apt to say, I'll take anyone and everyone that's willing to pay me, even if they're not the ideal client. So if you can become at least at some point willing to turn away someone and say, you know, I don't know that we're a good fit, then I think you're more clear as to what your ideal customer is. And so that's the thing that I think really is the differentiator between just throwing mud at the wall and hoping something sticks and somebody pays me versus I'm going to be deliberate and intentional in my messaging, in the targeting of whom I'm going after. And at the end of the day, I'm going to service a specific clientele. And so, and that kind of bleeds into it, the niche marketing concepts and the avatars that you may consider as you create your marketing messaging, but it also deals with pricing. There's a lot to be said segment, which is why it's a orb in and of itself. It's meant to be a very deliberate conversation that the business is having about their company.
Let's chip on to the next circle. Let's talk about production. Now, if you're listening, you can change the word operations, but the word used in the book is production. This is going to be a bias, but presumably a lot of business owners, they either have a strong sales mentality or they're strong with a craft. And in the book, Gerber is mentioned periodically, a great technician, but what would you define as what is production? What's good production? What's good operations for the businesses that you're talking about in this book?
I would describe it as production is everything that's taking place after the transaction or sell has been agreed to. Once that agreement has taken place, now the burden is on us as a company to deliver. In fact, I dare say over-deliver on the service that we're offering or the product that we're going to provide. And so is one, the onboarding. It's based what that customer experience is like. Are we able to over deliver in that regard? It's next also the salesperson communicating to the delivery team what expectation is. This is what I sold. This is what the customer understands. Let's deliver that. But the third thing is that client relation. I think there's a lot to be said for, especially in today's business world, how that collaboration with the customer is going. Are we communicating timely with them? Are we keeping them in the loop as to what to expect? Are we able to, in the delivery of the product, follow up and get a review? A lot of that production side is obviously the standard operating procedures. Do we have this turnkey process to ensure that every customer is getting the similar or same product or service it's a very involved process. And when you're a smaller business, the business owner perhaps is involved very much in the day-to-day fulfillment of what's happening. But as you grow, you've got to actually put in place key individuals, processes to ensure that you're delivering a standard product. And that's what that production side is trying to address.
One of the lines that I highlighted, and again, I went back to one of my original, I have this in the Kindle version, but I actually went back to the physical copy and I had it underlined. All processes can and should be improved on a continual basis. I am a big, it's more like muscle memory, but this mindset of continuous improvement, that's hard to teach to a business owner. But the culture and the mindset of continuous improvement, what's your suggestions to CEOs? And by the way, this book is also for accountants. How do you start getting people to just have that top of mind at all times?
Excellent question. The way I would address it is technology. So often I think what's happening is if you look back over the years, you will find that today there are numerous things that have been automated, third-party applications, plugins that can complement your work. If you don't embrace those, if you don't embrace the technology, I think you're losing out on opportunities to systematize different processes in the company, but also cut or mitigate some of your costs or expenses. And I'll just share with you a few examples. If you went back a number of years ago, in the room adjacent to me, I would have a server room with tens of thousands of dollars of equipment that was managed by an employee who was costing me tens of thousands of dollars each year, nearly six figures to manage. We had to deal with keeping the room cool. We had to keep the technology so that it was behind different security walls so that it wasn't compromised. We had platforms updated with the newest and improved updates. There was a lot of effort in maintaining those servers and the software programs that we had on there. We had proprietary software that we were paying programmers to create that we're on those platforms to help us run our business and take care of our customers. I can tell you today that that server are actually a dead weight. They don't exist because we've gone to the point where we were able to identify third-party platforms that do a much better job of securing the data, keeping the content or the platforms on a newer plateau in the sense of skills and services. My costs are dramatically less today fulfilling our services to our customers using a third-party platform that is far more secure, far more robust than what I was able to have internally. Now, if I was so myopic and felt, okay, well, the server's going out, I need to buy a new one, and my IT guy's got a job elsewhere, I've got an employment. If I just held onto that old business model, my customers wouldn't notice the difference, by the way. The customers would still receive the same quality training and support that they're receiving, but the back end would have been a mess. And it's definitely something I'm glad that I was able to find better systems today for, and it's been the evolution of the company. So I highly recommend business owners find the time to go to industry-related conferences and go to the vendor areas and find out what resources are available for you to consider in your business.
Top of mind right now, I'm going to be visiting with a physical therapy owner here shortly. And one of the first things I had the owner do, and he has multiple clinics, first thing I had him do was be a customer. I prefer the term customer or patient, you know, be a customer, you know, walk in, go through the process. What do you like? What you don't like? What's slow? What was not great? And then do you have anything that needs to be fixed? Again, I think that mindset is hard to, you're a little bit different. You're the guy that we would want on the team. That's why you're a president. I just wish we had more people who thought like you, but again, that mindset, just always thinking about how could this be better? It's elusive. I find.
It very elusive. A lot of people are very possessive of what they've taken time to build and organize, and they're very reluctant to give it out. I've experienced that. But at the same time, I have to say that when you work with a third party, you can find that they'll give it greater attention and service, and they have the greater aptitude than sometimes you have internally. So it's not always perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction, I feel.
And before we move on, just one last point, because again, this is so provocative, just the production piece in this book is, I think, one of the greatest inventions of improving production. It's not Visio or any other online software where you can do flowcharts. The best invention, I'm pausing because I'm watching your face here. It's like, what's he going to say? It's the post-it notes. It's just step one, right? The post-it note, post two, post-it number three. And you can start we don't need that. I just think that's the greatest invention. So I didn't want to move past this until I just threw that out to you.
Well, I'm going to take that and build off of it, because I've had numerous times with clients when working with them, they're trying to improve their processes. In fact, they're trying to automate their processes. What can we do to maybe go from a paper environment to a paperless system? And they're maybe looking at CRMs that they're going to implement, and they don't know. The easiest way to figure this out is you go to paper. And like you said, with post-it notes, you just put out all the steps, and it clearly defines if-then clauses. If this happens, where does the paper go? It goes here or here. And all of a sudden, the workflow becomes more obvious when it's physical. And going through that process, like you're explaining with the post-it notes, you quickly see, okay, we need to keep this internal. We cannot outsource this. This is something that's proprietary to us. This is something we can let go of, and we can be better at it than us. And we can probably find somebody that's cheaper at it, because we don't need to employ someone to do that. All of a sudden, these things, you start to realize, okay, this is this is what is us proprietary. This is what we're able to let go of. And it won't, if they drop the ball, it's not going to negatively impact our business. So you're able to really find what's that next thing that you can actually then explore and hopefully implement in your business that really could be revolutionary.
So this is a sneaky book. So for someone who works with a lot of scale ups, if you hand them a book, on accounting, they're not going to read it. And by the way, just for fun, since we're talking about accounting, I'm holding my hand the greatest accounting book ever written, It's called Relevance Lost by Johnson and Kaplan. Read it right early in my career. There's no way a CEO is going to read this. This is for the trained bookkeeper, the trained accountant. So you're sneaky because you're hiding accounting into, well, we talk about marketing, we talk about production. Owners want to read about that. So I, again, very good writing and that you incorporate accounting in this book, but it's one of the part of the three legs in order to get this business right. I'm going to ask a stupid question, but I've got to ask so we can hear from you. The stupid question is, why is good accounting needed in any organization, whether it's 100 million or 500,000?
Wow.
I teed that one up for you, didn't I?
Well, I could answer this in a, you did. And I can answer this in a few ways. I'm going to give you a couple of answers, meaning each is going to be standalone. Okay. The first answer is simply because accounting is the language of business, and a business owner is a fool to presume that they can run a business and not listen to the heartbeat of its own entity. And so I very much teach, I speak of the business being this self-sustaining, living, breathing entity. And the way it communicates to the owner is through the accounting. And oftentimes business owners don't speak accountant. They don't speak accounting. And so what happens is they need to lean on someone else to be that translator, someone that can come in and help actually take the numbers and put it into something that's now useful to the business owner to make business decisions. So that's one answer that I can give you as to why we crept it in there to simply say you to be profitable. In order to be successful, you have to be able to understand and lean on the numbers, because that's where you're going to get. It's kind of like the canary in the coal mine. If you're not hearing what's going on in the business, you can get into trouble with cash flow and your business could come to a grinding halt. You're undercapitalized. You're in a position where you're not seeing changes in the margin. And therefore, especially with inflation, you're not adjusting quick enough within your business. Now, every sale you make, you're losing money because you didn't quickly adapt. That's all coming from the accounting. And if you're not listening to that, you could quickly find yourself a month, a quarter, a half a year into the business model and realize, oh my heavens, we've got a problem here because we just sold ourselves out of business. So that's what we're trying to talk about there. But the second answer I want to give to you is we put it in there because I think for many of business owners, it's perhaps the least comfortable part of running the company. It's the least sexy initially because of the fact that most business owners love the sell. They love to talk about the product or service. They get excited about it. That passion comes through, hence the clients that they get. They love the production. They love delivering that product or service that they are so impassioned about because it's uniquely theirs and they like to fulfill those sales and take care of their customers. That's all the fun, sexy stuff, but it is fun and sexy to run it also with the numbers. And so we wanted to help the business owner realize that that's also their responsibility. And ultimately, I'm going to dare say there are some things in there that the business owner needs to recognize are non-transferable. They can't delegate certain parts of the business that they're supposed to shoulder, but they're not. And oftentimes it's because they just don't understand. And so the book was meant to help them realize, let us help you see how these numbers are your friend and you can use these to make more informed business decisions, better informed business decisions, if you just actually tap into these numbers. And so obviously you're going to have then that conversation about key performance indicators that are even outside of accounting, but these are numbers that are essential to the success of the business. Are they watching them? Are they aware of what are referred to as leading and lagging indicators, the numbers that actually define what's going on in the business? Are they using these numbers in a dashboard fashion to incorporate everyone else's participation, creating a sense of accountability in the organization because the dashboarding that the business chooses to do whether it be on computer screens or on television monitors, dry erase boards. Those numbers are important. But the third answer I'm going to give to this is, at the end of the day, the owner would actually have an interest in the numbers, that they would have a curiosity, a genuine, that's interesting. I'm running my business, and I think if I do this right, these numbers might actually be kind of fun and interesting. And numbers can take on a level of, let's say, excitement, that all of a sudden in the organization, you're wanting the numbers. They are, if I dare say, they're agnostic to the individual. They remove emotion. They are what they are. We're either selling today more than we sold yesterday. We're either selling this month more than we sold last month. All of a sudden, the numbers, viable things in business that the business owner should be watching. And if you can make it fun and exciting, I think that's an element of the business that's lacking, to bring, as you started this whole conversation, the three orbs together to help us ultimately find the profit that exists in the business. If these orbs exist autonomously in the organization, we have marketing and sales doing a great job, but not talking to accounting and production, we're not going to have the overlap that generates profit. We need the profit. That's why the company exists.
You have, Roger, an extremely unfair advantage. You have great communication skills. I could listen to you all day. I was working with mentoring, coaching Rebecca. Rebecca has a outsourced CFO firm, and her focus is really more on CAO work. She loves the controller aspect. She's going to be speaking to a small group of business owners, and she wasn't for sure really how to sell this. And I said, here's what you can do. You're going to tell a story. You're going to tell a story about Sarah, who runs a temp staffing firm, $15 million. And you're going to talk about how she's always frustrated, never knows where her cash position is, you know, bills that are due that aren't even in the system, and just list about 10 frustrations that Sarah goes through because of really stupid, bad accounting. And then you're going to tell the same story about Sarah, where everything is like a well-oiled machine, and some of the things that you talked about. Just a suggestion for accountants, accounting managers who are either contemplating a new job or they're selling outsourced accounting. Be good storytellers. Be really good storytellers, and also be able to communicate the way you do the benefit of good accounting versus non-existent good accounting. Again, I teed that up for you.
Thank you. The whole idea here is, I would love to go to the accounting profession and first of all say that they have a voice and they should be sharing it with their clients, with the business owners. They have information to share, and literally it's a light that they need to the business community. It's too often, I think, just the produce the financial reports, give them to the client, the business owner, presume they know how to read them, presume they're going to use them, presume they're going to reference them as they're making business decisions, presume they're going to be aware of the trends that are in there, that they are, that they should be watching. There's too many presumptions. We should be taking initiative as accounting professionals to go into these clients and these business owners, the managers of the companies for whom we work, and take the information, highlight the information, draw attention to the narrative going on there. We should be now saying, okay, I'm going to take the role of a translator, and I'm going to interpret what this says, and I'm going to surmise a few things, take some little bits of information and highlight them in words to say, here's what I have. So I've got a phenomenal controller in our organization, and I speak with her on a daily basis. And one of the things that's very important to me, and I'm very important or very specific about what I'm about to say, what's very important to me as I'm running the company myself is her perspective of the numbers. Of course, I'm in the business day to day. Of course, I'm dealing with various things that range from human resources to marketing and sales to product development. That's stuff I'm consumed with. But at the end of the day, when I receive the financial reports on a monthly basis from her, she does a monthly summary and attached are the PDFs of all the reports. But she now takes, and in a paragraph or two, tells me a narrative of what's happened in the month. I want her perspective. I want her insights as to these are the things that are standing out to her. She's as aware of the business as I am. And so I want her perspective. Now, a lot of that is tainted by the conversations that I've had with her over the last month. So she knows what things are concerning me, what things I'm paying attention to. But I'm still curious, when she writes that paragraph, what does she talk about? What does she want to bring attention to? What does she say is going well? What does she think needs to be given attention? Well, if there's something there that I didn't notice, I really pay attention, because that's something that somehow slipped by my perception. And I just want to say that that paragraph or two in that email mean the world to me as I'm running my business. And it comes from someone in the accounting department who has seen the financial reports and who's providing them to me. That's invaluable.
Give her a high five for me. My first controllership position, 1990s. And yes, there was a such thing as Microsoft Publisher. I remember having on my PC, what's this? Microsoft Publisher. So my first set of financials, I would write about a 15-page magazine, and I would actually interview people out in the field, people in the warehouse. And that's, so even if you do it one time, but I did it every month because it really kept my head in the game. And so, again, give her a high five for me. Hey, a couple of quick questions on accounting. And let's focus more on the smaller organization. One of the big mistakes I see over and over and over. Now, my sample size is small. It's under 100, 120-ish that I've worked with over the past 20-some-odd years. Every CEO almost always gets the hire wrong. Can you, before I ask you why, can you relate to that? Have you observed that? And if so, why do most CEOs get that first hire of maybe their first accountant wrong?
I don't know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to share my experience. Too often, I think they're hiring a mirror of themselves, and they shouldn't be hiring themselves. They need a different perspective. They need someone different than them. So I think, if anything, I've seen people that have said, well, I like this person. They're like me. They do things. And I think those are all great qualities. You can ascribe them to, they fit well in the culture because it's my culture and they're like me. So they're going to be great. What I really want is that different perspectives. I want someone that's going to be able to notice something that's outside of my periphery. And so my answer to your question is I'm actually quite interested in different perspective. So there's my answer to your your question.
And I was anxious to hear what you had to say, but we're on the same page. They don't know accounting. So how do they know what questions to ask? How do they know how to filter them in or out? What questions are they going to ask? And I get this a lot too. And we're not trying to ding CPAs. I used to be one once upon a time too. Oh, he or she's a CPA, so she's got to be a fit. It's like, well, maybe that person knows how to do tax returns or they've done audits, but have they ever worked as a controller or under a good, and you're nodding, I appreciate that, but they think, oh, CPA, that's an automatic, so I'm going to hire them. That's not the right answer either.
I am duly aware of the fact that a business owner is uncomfortable oftentimes interviewing for a position they know nothing about. And I have so much respect for that business owner who recognizes they need to fill the role in their accounting department and hire this manager, someone that's going to oversee their processes and determine their cash flow policies and so forth. There's a lot to go on here. But as a business owner, so often they are intimidated. They don't know what vocabulary to be using, what questions to be asking to determine whether or not the individual even has the skill sets or aptitude for the job. And so it is very overwhelming. And I respect that. Part of the book In the Black is meant to bring to the surface some of the things that you can use to define the position and in layman terms, discuss the role. So if you can find somebody that can communicate with, I don't need geek speak. I don't need the accountant that only speaks to me in a language I don't understand. I want to understand, okay, you're going to be given this role if you're hired. Can you deliver these types of things to me? First and foremost, I want month end within no more than 10 days of the end of the month. Can you deliver that to me? Can you create within the month the processes such that you can at the end of the month close it and give me these reports? Yes or no? If they're overwhelmed by that, then we got a problem. Second, I'm in a position where I need to have a very clear understanding of these numbers. And so I'm expecting you to do comparative analysis last month to previous month to the last year, last quarter to the previous quarter, last quarter to the same quarter previous year. I need you to do assessments for me. And in that analysis, report to me any of the anomalies or any of the negative trends that are occurring. Can you do that for me? And that conversation with the expectations of what the business is going to be doing all of a sudden clarifies better the role. But to your point, I think there's a good deal of discomfort hiring, interviewing someone for a position that they just don't understand. And it takes a little bit of effort on the business owner's part to find that right person. And it is uncomfortable. You got to do it, though. You've definitely got to do it.
We had on Tiffany Couch earlier in the year, one of our top downloads. She wrote the book, Is There a Thief in Your Company? Or it may be The Thief in Your Company. She is one of the premier forensic accountants in the United States. So we need good controls. I'm curious, and I have not looked under the hood enough. I mean, I have looked at some of your content years ago. Do you have modules for internal controls? And before you answer, I'll let you start thinking about that answer. I just know that even my days at KPMG, internal controls, even for accountants, can be a very abstract concept. So trying to make those controls concrete in a small business, I think the accountant needs to understand controls, but so does the business owner. So can we just briefly address fraud and internal controls?
First of all, I am no expert other than the fact that I do run a business. So I'll put that hat on. This has been the subject of numerous conversations that I've had with my own business coach, that I've had with the principal shareholders of the business. So this is definitely something that's a concern. There is an elusiveness to this, which is to say there are plenty of companies that have in place excellent policies and procedures that when you're dealing with a nefarious person, someone that is jaded, someone that has malicious intent, unfortunately, that's how crimes occur. That's how fraud takes place. And so admittedly, you can try many a things, but if you're dealing with someone that has just that malicious intent, unfortunately, we're all vulnerable. That being said, yes, we do address some different things that can be done. And ultimately, I'd like to think that there's a best practice or process that you can implement in the company. The one thing I can say is this, as the president of the org, to be aware of where the money is, where it's going, and I have to put into place things that have kind of a checks and balance. And ultimately, the buck stops with me. So if I were to become later aware of something fraudulent, I respectfully realize that it was because of my oversight and my giving too much trust. And so I'm sensitive to that. So I do each month do a variety of things that are part of our closing of the books to ensure that I look at all the expenses in the organization. Any that are not familiar to me, either in quantity, the dollar amount, or by namesake, I just don't know that vendor or that purchase. I know my business well enough that I do spend the time to go through all the expenses at a glance. And if there's any question of what that new purchase is, I send an email. And there have been times where I have found that reoccurring billings that were supposed to have been stopped hadn't stopped. I have found instances where somebody purchased something that I did not approve and it's not going to continue any longer. The best thing I can tell you here, prior to me, the previous president, he put in place financial thresholds for the departments that said you as an individual can only purchase so much. And without my permission or the permission of your superior, you may not make this transaction approval unless it is a approved standard recurring relationship. So if we all understood, we don't need each month to approve what we already know. That was a very helpful part of this process because any dollar amount that's over a certain dollar amount, if it's not familiar to me, I question it. And so that is one of those little standouts, and it's a very aha thing to me. So that's first and foremost. It's also, if I don't see a name that I'm familiar with, itemize that, send it off. We're having a dialogue with whomever's approved it. I'm asking the accountant what they know about it. I'm asking the signatory person why. And that conversation is very critical to me.
What I'm hearing is keep your head in the game, ask questions. I've had one situation where there was fraud with a client, and that owner did not do what you were doing. If I could just make one suggestion, is on the bank statement that's online, pick a number, just pick any random number, and then ask the accounting manager or whoever's in charge, what's this number? And on a credit card statement, just pick any random number. Now, don't do the same whatever, but what is this? And it just shows that, oh, they're paying attention. But everything you just mentioned, I could not recommend enough, is that, again, you're involved and you probably just minimize the chance of fraud to like one chance in a million. So,
well, I'm trying. I'm going to add to it, though, just because of how you described that. We have a policy that if you're unable to actually produce the invoices for any and all transactions, you lose the credit card that you may have had this company issued. You can still do personal transactions and ask for reimbursements, but you've lost the ability to use a company card if you can't provide the proof of receipt and what the explanation of it is. So that to me is a critical thing. I hated it when my accounting department was trying to track down receipts because they're responsible to have all transactions accounted for. And so they don't get to actually reconcile without those receipts. And if they're missing receipts without explanations, they start harping on it. Well, if that's a continual burden on them to harp for those things, then that person loses that privilege of having a company card. So, yeah, these things are very important and they do have consequences. So I do suggest, like you're saying, implement these in your business, take it seriously and mitigate your liability in this.
Books. I ask this to everybody. Obviously, so you have a bookshelf. I usually end up buying some of these titles. So are you a reader? And by the way, if you're not, it's okay. Maybe
I am a reader, actually. So I am a reader.
So what are some of your favorite books of all time?
So some of the ones that I definitely would start with happen to be Think and Grow Rich. That was a big one to me, made a big change in my life. I did read E-Myth. That was very influential in mine. And you mentioned it's referenced quite a book in the book, In the Black. I would add to that the 1 Minute Manager and Who Moved My Cheese. Who Moved My Cheese is a big one for me. It keeps me on my toes. It reminds me that I cannot settle with status quo. I've got to be looking for next things. And as a business leader, that is my job. My job is to be looking on the horizon and literally see what I can do to adapt the business. If I'm in the day-to-day or if I am running the company next year and it's the same as it was this year, I'm not doing my job well enough.
Roger, this has been fantastic. Enjoyed every minute of this. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, it's a pleasure. Mark, you've been a wonderful host and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
Roger Kinect, president of Universal Accounting. Thank you very much. The book is In the Black, 9 Principles to Make Your Business Profitable by Alan Bostrom. And Roger is one of the contributors of that book. And Roger's a class act, and he'd applaud me for mentioning them as well. The other firm I strongly recommend for bookkeeping certification is the AIPB. That's the American Institute of Professional Bookkeepers, and their workbook on internal controls. It's excellent, even for the $75 million controller. We need to call this a wrap. I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf.